From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Ben Ponce, and this is On Target.
I'm Gari Mangala, and today On Target we will be discussing the recent Tree of Life massacre in Pittsburgh, as well as the resignation of Joshua Gonzalez from his position as Student Senate Diversity Committee Chair.
Then we'll replay a clip from Diego Roach's senior recital. Loyal On Target listeners may recognize the music. Well, it's been a couple weeks.
It has been.
Let's dive back in. What's been going on in the world or at Gettysburg College?
Which is the world?
Or both.
Yeah. Well, to start, last Saturday, we're recording this on Sunday, November 4th, the Tree of Life massacre in Pittsburgh happened. It was obviously a tragedy, and I doubt anybody that knew any of the lost lives is listening, but if they are, my condolences go out to them. But we did have a few events on campus in remembrance and just of education in that, one of which was a panel that was held last week on Thursday from 11:30 to 12:30 in Cub 260. Two professors, Carrie Wallach in the German Studies Department and Stephen Stern in the Judaic Studies, but also in like Philosophy Department, spoke about just the history of anti-Semitism and just try to contextualize the situation. And at the end took questions about what students and just people in the community can do to be a more welcoming community and also just properly recognize what happened in Pittsburgh and prevent it from happening again.
Yeah, and you went to the event.
Yeah, I did.
And you said that it was a standing room only.
Yeah, it was packed. You know, students, but also faculty, administration. JMR got up and spoke a few words and read a bit of Howard Fineman's op-ed in the New York Times. He was the commencement speaker at last year's commencement.
Yeah, and you also mentioned the quote from Stephen Stern in the article that there had been a 70-year vacation from anti-Semitism in the United States, but that in light of the Pittsburgh tragedy as well as the
Charlottesville
incident last August, I guess that would have been. Hard to believe that was 14 months ago.
Yeah.
But that vacation appears to have reached its conclusion.
It was interesting because I remember speaking to a few first years recently about how a lot of my orientation, because I'm a sophomore now, was contextualized surrounding Charlottesville because it had just happened before we came on campus. And obviously Gettysburg College does have a reputation for certain instances like this. So, you know, we talked about it a lot. It was something that was brought up a lot during our first year walk and things like that. And, you know,
to be clear, when you're talking about instances like this, you're referring to Confederate monument situations?
Also, like, I remember coming on campus and hearing, like, the KKK have come to campus and things like that. You know, just, like, rumors, but also, like, we're close to the border of Pennsylvania and you hear things. Mm-hmm. And I remember JMR speaking about one of the first emails that I saw from JMR was about Charlottesville and how we will never tolerate things like that on Gettysburg's campus. And I was talking to some first years about it, and they were saying how like that must have been like an interesting thing to come to campus after hearing about this happening at UVA. And, you know, they were saying like that wasn't their experience because there wasn't a tragedy like that had happened so close to them moving in, and then this happened. But I, you know, that panel seemed very productive, and not only that, you know, everyone was listening very attentively, not only in like their silence, but just like, it just seemed as though everyone in the room was of the understanding that, this isn't something to be tolerated. This isn't something to be joked about or pushed aside or forgotten. Like, you know, there's with the news cycle, the way it works, you know, it's the tragedy of the week and you move on. But from that panel, it seemed like people walked out really remembering that. And I remember it was mentioned, Carrie Wallach mentioned that next week, so this coming week, is the 80th anniversary of Kristallnacht. And, you know, I heard murmurs in the crowd of people saying, like, we should do something about that. Like, we should remember that. And I think in that way, this was productive in that we won't be forgetting about it. And then, Ben, you went to the vigil that was held on Friday, right?
Yeah, there was a vigil held in the Cub Ballroom Friday afternoon. It was about 30 minutes or so, in which various college dignitaries, including Darian Davenport, the executive director of multicultural engagement, Julie Ramsey, the dean of students, again, President Riggs, along with David Bass, the director of Hillel, and some students, including Randy Feely and Hannah Labowitz, read or spoke regarding the tragedy. And there was a fairly packed house in the ballroom. And Hannah Labowitz, who is a sophomore, wrote a column in the Gettysburgian. She is a Pittsburgher and is Jewish, and had personal connections to several of those whose lives were lost in the tragedy that occurred. And she read that piece during the vigil, and I won't read the whole thing now, but the piece concluded that this event does not represent my city, but its effect will be seen and felt long after October the 27th. This will be shown through the unification of people from different ethnicities and religions. This will be seen through the bonding of people across a city. This will be seen through the rise of people voting to increase gun control. How many more people have to die before something is changed? Thoughts and prayers aren't going to do anything because the congregants of Tree of Life were praying on Saturday, and a shooter still came in to their synagogue and murdered 11 individuals. More needs to be done. And perhaps that's a nice segue. Nice doesn't seem like the right word, but a segue nonetheless into stating that this Tuesday, October the 6th, is Election Day. And there is a polling place on the Gettysburg College campus for those that are registered to vote here. The polls open, I believe, at 7 in the morning and stay open till, I want to say, 8 p.m. And the College Union Building Ballroom is a polling place for Gettysburg's precinct that is on the college campus. Mm-hmm. And so students and others will descend on the college to cast their ballots. Some have prognosticated a blue wave in this election. Others, less certain. I saw earlier today Nate Silver, a New York Times pollster, founder of the 538 blog, said there's a very good chance that Democrats will take back the House, or they might not. Both are very real possibilities. So, I mean, everything is a possibility depending on who shows up to the polls. So, public service announcement in general, vote. Have you voted? Are you voting here?
I voted in my. I sent in my absentee ballot a few weeks ago.
As did I.
Yeah, so.
Hopefully it got there.
Yeah, I gave it to my mom when she came up, so she mailed it, and we're hoping for the best.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Until this very moment, I hadn't thought of the possibility that the U.S. Postal Service could have lost my ballot, but now that's going to keep me up this evening.
I apologize.
That's okay. It wasn't your fault. It's the United States Postal Service. Big fan. So, other news and notes on the college campus. There was a faculty meeting last Thursday that, frankly, I'll be rather upfront about this. I looked at the agenda for this faculty meeting before it happened and thought it was going to be a pretty dull meeting.
And it wasn't. And it wasn't.
It was not. The only agenda item at this meeting was the reading of what I assumed was a fairly innocuous and self-evident proposal that faculty members should not be grading their children in class.
Which seems pretty normal of a request.
You would think. Well, some other members of the faculty had some other ideas. I spoke with a senior faculty and administrative official afterwards who told me it's nice to see the faculty engaged on an issue, at least, suggesting that perhaps the faculty is not typically as engaged. Certainly it is the case that the faculty struggled to get quorums at its faculty meeting last year. So far, so good this year. All of which is to say, Brian Meyer, on behalf of the Academic Policy and Programs Committee, APPC, got up in front of the group to read a motion that APPC put together, having become aware of multiple instances over the past year in which faculty members were responsible for taught courses for credit in which their children or other relatives were enrolled. And I think that I would have thought that the potential for bias or even the appearance of bias there would be fairly self-evident. I mean, after all, we talk a lot about unconscious bias. I think this would be a fairly conscious bias, one would think. Yet a great number of faculty members stood up in opposition to this proposal. Susan Russell, professor, the John Adams Professor of Theater Arts, said that the faculty ought to have an ethic of not showing favoritism and that therefore it should not matter whether faculty have children in their class, and that some faculty members would be inclined to grade their own children more harshly than other students, which also, to me, anyway,
doesn't seem fair either.
I was going to say that doesn't seem terribly fair to their children. But in any case, Brian Meyer afterwards, and it's worth noting he's a psychologist who seemed rather flabbergasted during the meeting that people didn't, you know, he mentioned at one point that in-group, out-group dynamics, that even by just assigning people a color, the blue team and the red team, that already that's enough to start making people feel differently about the out-group, such that, and show favoritism to the in-group, such that certainly having bred a child,
yeah,
you might have a little bit of intrinsic unconscious favoritism thereof, or, but in any case, he said that he's surprised to hear that we being the faculty, don't think there's a problem. Nevertheless, the APPC will have to go back to the drawing board on that particular motion. I imagine it will come up at a future faculty meeting in a much more watered down form, perhaps a statement of caution against faculty members teaching their children. One point that was raised by another member of APPC, also from the psychology department, Dan McCall, was that the APPC was concerned about other students in classes where, there's a child of a professor or other relative of the professor feeling, a feeling that it's not fair to them what's going on. And so that was not a point that was otherwise discussed at the faculty meeting. He was the only one to raise that, which was interesting. You know, I don't want to weigh in on the merits of this beyond what I've already said. I will say that I did find it surprising that this faculty, which at least purports to have a great interest in eliminating unconscious biases and recognizing them, didn't really seem to think that one existed when they were responsible for the grade that their child receives in a class that they taught.
I get it to an extent. I get the idea that, like, if you're grading a paper, you should be able to take... And, like, in that way, I do get it. Like, if you're grading a paper, I think it's pretty easy to, like, remove the name from your mind.
Blind grading is a thing that can happen in papers.
Yeah. However, like, I'm thinking specifically, like, you brought up Susan, who's in the theater department. And, like, the idea of, like, if someone's putting on, like, a performance, you can't... Like, that's your child up there. And regardless of how great of an actor they are, that is still going to be your child up there. And I just don't see it being possible to take that out of account. Or the fact that, and not even, like, bias, but, like, something like that, you understand. If they're giving a presentation, for example, or if they're debating something, you are more in tune to what your child is saying. You've raised that person. How are you going to remove the fact that maybe you understand what they're getting at more than you would if they weren't your child because you spent their entire lives with them?
Yeah, and, you know, the proposal, the workaround that APPC had proposed was that if there's a case where a student must take for their major or for some other reason a class taught by a relative, that student's work should be graded by another member of the faculty in the department or the program, which again, seems like a fairly reasonable possibility, except that a great number of faculty either are or think they are the only ones qualified. You know, there were several, one example that came up was in the art department, mm-hmm. that if you're the ceramics professor, you're the only one qualified to grade ceramics. And you know, maybe that's true. I think it's probably the case that there are faculty members who think they are the only ones qualified to teach a course, but may in fact not be. You know, certainly just because something is your area of specialization doesn't mean that, you know, someone who knows a little about it can't teach.
Yeah.
A little less about it, excuse me, can't teach a 200 level course on it at the undergraduate level, you would think. But, you know, I think APPC thought along those lines too when they brought forward this proposal. I do not imagine they were expecting it to be as controversial as it proved to be. But we'll see where it goes from here. Brian Meyer told us that APPC will look into all of the options and move forward accordingly. What else has been going on at Gettysburg College lately?
Well, surprising no avid listener of On Target, there is a lot going on in Student Senate. Where do we begin? So last On Target episode, we did discuss with Ivana Lopez Espinoza the announcement that Josh Gonzalez would be resigning from his position as Diversity Committee Chair. However, at that time, it had not been announced to the time that we recorded. It had not been announced yet to Student Senate as a whole. Mm-hmm. That night, on Monday night last week, it was announced that he would be resigning. And at first, it seemed like it would be fine. Like, it just mm-hmm. seemed like, you know, I wasn't there last week. I watched the live stream. But at first, it just seemed like, you know, it's fine. And we're just going to get a new applications and we'll have a new diversity committee chair. I didn't expect it to turn into what it did during mm-hmm. the student concerns section. For anyone who's not familiar with how Student Senate functions, you get your executive board committee reports from each member of the executive board. Then they move into old business, which may be like announcements from last week and might be whatever it is, clarifications. And then new business, which is usually recognitions, budget, approvals, and then you move into students' concerns, which last year was a lot of mold, a lot of washing machines, and
it's generally a time for petty complaints.
100%.
For example, I tend to file my student concerns in person with members of Student Senate that I happen to know, such as that the straws in Bullet are disintegrating within 20 minutes in my beverage, and if I do not intend to drink my cherry Coke in 15 minutes, that the straw disintegrating is not helpful, and that although I acknowledge that plastic straws are not good for the environment, I need a solution that is not going to disintegrate in my Coke in 15 minutes, and that the college ought to be able to provide one.
Okay.
That's my student concern.
I have a suggestion. You can order metal straws on Amazon, and they're even better than paper straws for the environment.
Well, you're right. I could do that, or I could raise that issue with the Student Senate Safety and Sustainability Committee, unfortunately abbreviated the SS. And, you know, they could look into that. Now, interestingly enough, the Safety and Sustainability Committee is looking into packaging at Bullet, although I have a feeling it's going to be going in the opposite direction on the straw issue than I would have hoped. All right, thus ends my rant about paper
Thank
straws.
Thank you. I don't know. For some reason, I thought you were going to say, thus endeth the Bullet report.
Thus endeth the Bullet straw rant. Let's take a straw poll on that subject. Where to go from there, I know.
I might be filing my resignation from On Target. Anyway, back to that.
People love the banter. You know how many people love the banter?
Oh, yeah?
Today, I was on campus, and two loyal On Target listeners came up to me said, "Are you Ben?" And let me just say, that's a dangerous question to answer.
That's when you say no and run away.
But I said, why, yes, I am. Actually, I said,
yes.
Yes. And they were two loyal on-target listeners who had come to Diego Rocha, the composer of our theme song's senior recital, after hearing about it on Target and after having listened to his excellent work, theme song, excellently composed theme song that is the premise of our podcast, the airs at the top and throughout our podcast. Today it was performed live by Elliot Pager and Dr. Jocelyn Swigger, a piano student and the associate professor of piano. Incidentally, also the chair of faculty council. But in any case, Dr. Swigger and Elliot played the whole piece, and we'll play that later in the program. But anyway, thank you to those on-target listeners whose name I didn't get.
Yeah, hi.
But, hello, and thank you for listening. And to all of you other loyal on-target listeners, feel free to ask me in public if I'm Ben, and I'll probably say yes, because I am, in fact, Ben. All right, now that I've derailed your story with two anecdotes, feel free to carry on.
Where was I?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
Student concerns.
Student concerns. So, yeah. So, right after new business, they go into the student's concerns section. Like I said, sometimes it's mold. Sometimes it's washing machines. Sometimes it's something absolutely ridiculous. However, at last Student Senate, it was, in my opinion, a very mean-spirited campaign against Joshua Gonzalez by many members that, you know, especially members that would identify within, like, a lot of the conversation groups that, for now, I will wholeheartedly just, like, I will say that Josh is not, like, is what was in the room and was very quiet, and he is just a very quiet kid, and just watching the live stream and watching just the way people were going about it was very interesting to see, because I think people tend to forget that he was in the room until one point that Nick Arbaugh kind of shut everybody up and was like, this guy's in the room, and also this is not very nice or respectful. But essentially it was a lot about the fact that Joshua Gonzalez is not very involved with any of those conversation groups on campus or OME in general, while being a person of color. And a lot of people had issues with that. And a lot of people were saying that a person of color should be the diversity committee chair, and a person of color should be, you know, involved in, like, a conversation group or many conversation groups. Ivana Lopez Espinoza at one point did speak and say that diversity is more than being a person of color, which a lot of people tend to forget. Diversity is more than being a person of color. It's more than being a woman. It's more than being gay. You know, there are so many forms of diversity. Socioeconomically, we can speak so much about that. That's not really spoken about. Your political affiliations, your religion, what country you come from, your gender identity, and, like, all of this stuff, your ability, your mobility. And that stuff is not spoken about entirely. When we say diversity, you immediately think about people of color. But, you know, I think that in what Ivana said, you know, it's very important to remember that Josh being Latin is not everything about him. As the next diversity committee chair, whatever their identities are that really are just outwardly expressed, if it's a woman, that person being a woman will not be her entire identity. And it's not her job to be completely in conversation with, you know, the Women's Center, for example. I think what Nick was getting at is that they should be willing to be in conversation with all of these groups. They don't need to be on the executive board of BSU to be diversity committee chair. It's not written anywhere in their constitution for that to be said. However, he said it is important that they facilitate conversation and are willing to really be passionate and go forward with anything that's, like, anything that's said in diversity committee, being able to bring that to the floor of Senate or bring that where it needs to go. And he saw that in Josh. Josh did not want the position anymore, and that's fine. And that's what Ben will look – Ben, wow. That's a Freudian slip of the century. What Nick will look for in the next committee chair. I know a lot of people were angry about it, and I would encourage anyone who has strong opinions about it to run for a committee chair, because you, if you're going to talk the talk, you better be able to walk the walk.
Yeah, I mean, I just say a few things about this. One is that certainly it is the case that Josh Gonzalez was an unconventional choice to be the Senate diversity chair.
Yeah.
While he is Latin American, he is politically conservative. And he is not, to his own admission, I don't want to say educated, although I think he used that term, but he's not someone who has participated in a lot of the conversation groups on campus that you just referred to. I did want to read his comment in the Gettysburgian upon his resignation about accusations that he was sort of a token appointment, which he said, quote, "The accusations of tokenism have honestly saddened me greatly because of their lack of recognition of the individual experience that it fails to take into account. It is absolutely correct that I, Josh, am an avid member of the Young Americans for Freedom and College Republicans. I'm not ashamed of the fact that I would consider myself right of center. As is the case for everyone, our political views have been a product of our own individual experiences. While I may not have had the same extensive training in the, quote, field of diversity, unquote, as other people may have had, I have not lost my sense of empathy and acknowledgement of the issues going on around me. Sure, I may be conservative, but it did stem from the fact that both of my parents were immigrants from Latin American countries who came over at a very young age. They developed values that they raised my older sister and I with. My views are also a result of the main fact that my next-door neighbor, who cared for me and my family for many years, was a Cuban refugee from Castro's oppressive regime. I grew up in an urban community in New Jersey where most of my friends were Latin American, were of Latin American and African American descent. I don't say this with an upset heart, but with a mind that pleads to all in society to view people as individuals with individual experiences," end quote.
Yeah, and I, for one, agree with that. I was in a conversation with a lot of members from my house, and my house is pretty politically diverse. And we were talking about this, but also just in general, just the atmosphere at Gettysburg campus, I think, is that, you know, shutting up the right is seen to be a cool thing to do. We were talking specifically about, you know, I'm one of two people of color in my house, and I was talking about how, like, you know, as a person of color, there is a stereotype, I think, because of some of the conversation groups on campus, that if someone were to say something less than polite to me, my immediate response should be or would be to call them racist and kind of shove them off. And I think what I did like about Josh's appointment was that he was a person of color and also right-winged, and I thought that he would be able to bridge the gap pretty well and create a community in which, you know, that's not the case. Because just as much as, you know, calling someone a not-so-nice name in regards to their race is not correct, I don't think calling someone outright racist when that's not their intention is correct either. Yeah, if someone screams the N-word at you, you can do that. But, like, if someone says something to me that's perhaps not that great, so, like, the where are you from thing, you know, I think there's a more polite way of handling situations that make someone feel uncomfortable than calling someone racist or misogynistic or xenophobic or whatever you would like to call them. And I think Josh was a person, and I hope the next person will also be, a committee chair that can just bring people together to discuss issues rather than shutting down those conversations, because it's not okay to quiet minority groups, but it's also not okay to quiet the right.
Yeah, and I mean, I think to your point, a couple weeks ago when Anna Perry was on this podcast and they were discussing how Outer Space had recently, Outer Space is the an organization of LGBT students on the Gettysburg College campus, and how Outer Space had recently moved away from shutting down people with right wing or even moderate views.
Yeah.
And how that was something that came after a great deal of consternation and is not something that is universally or perhaps even as a plurality is supported by members of that group. And so, you know, I think you're right that there is a culture that tends to want to kind of push to the side more conservative viewpoints. And I think we saw a manifestation that conservative students feel that way in last year, how the freedom of expression process transpired, to the extent that at every one of those town hall meetings that Jennifer Blomquist's work group held, and at every one of the open forums and, you know, in club meetings, it was always a handful of members, predominantly of YAF, the Young Americans for Freedom, that were there just pounding the notion that conservative viewpoints need to be protected speech, and that how they feel like, you know, without a statement of philosophy like the one that was developed, and it's worth noting that in large part, I think they were supportive of what was passed. You know, without such protections, they felt that their viewpoints were at risk for being silenced as hate speech. You know, we can have a discussion about what that is, but I do think there is certainly validity to the notion on this campus that groups like to engage with other groups at the ad hominem level rather than actually dig into the nuts and bolts of issues. And I think that groups from across the political and other ideological spectrums like to do that. That's not a reflection of any particular group.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, there's a lot to what you're saying, that there's kind of a culture that leans into calling names, for lack of a better term, and leans away from digging into the meat of the issues when those issues are not eloquently articulated in a, you know, the term politically correct has so much baggage, but yeah, in a sensitive fashion.
I mean, I even remember, like, last year after when we were having our, like, re-elections for Senate president, the conversations that were being had on Nick's existence as a YAF member and also wanting to run for student senate president. And Nick has had one of the most colorful bodies of student senate that I've heard of.
It's worth noting right now that there are 16 senators representing classes of 2019 through 22, and 8 of those 16 are people of color.
Yeah, and, like, that hasn't been – I think it would be insulting, and I think it would be insulting to their character, and I've been in these Senate meetings. I know how it's not like those 8 kids are sitting there quiet. You know, they're all participating. And I think it would be an insult to their character to say that that's tokenism. I think that, you know, is there something to be said about Josh's pick? Maybe. But, you know, these are all, from what I've seen, this is a very lively student senate that are willing to put in the work for the most part that I've seen. And that hasn't been based on whether you're white or black or Hispanic or Asian. Like, it's just been you're in student senate. And I think that is in part due to Nick's leadership, but that's also just in part to the fact that, like, we're not sitting here talking about people's identities. We're sitting here talking about people and the issues in student senate. And identity is an important thing. It is. And that is for diversity committee to, like, foster that. And instead of bashing somebody for their identity as a person in the right wing, I think it's important to go to diversity committee and have conversations with people like Josh, and just people in general that differ from you, and having those conversations and understandings. I think it's very similar to I know a lot of people in those conversation groups like BSU and LASA and GASA have talked about how they want people from Student Senate to come. I remember Anna Perry was discussing how they wanted admin to be coming to outer space and LASA and these groups. I think it's the same exact thing as coming to diversity committee or coming to center or coming to spaces that you're not comfortable with and breeding conversations with people that you tend to disagree with and trying to find some sort of, you know, humanity in something that has been so marginalized as being right-winged on this campus.
Right. And I mean, to give both sides a fair shake, I think it is also the case that if a large number of people from traditionally marginalized communities in the United States or traditionally underrepresented communities on the Gettysburg College campus don't feel comfortable at Student Senate, that Student Senate needs to go out of its way to address that. I mean, if Student Senate is going to act as a foundry for student discussion, what I think is the case is that Student Senate, at least, you know, in its current composition, genuinely wants to do that. I think that there's a conversation to be had about how to go about that. But I think that there is a genuine interest from the top all the way down through committee members, committee chairs and committee members, to have conversations and to make progress on that front. Speaking of which, Nick Arbaugh also rolled out the student committee on the Senate Committee on Great. It's abbreviated SCOGGLE.
I hate it.
Yeah,
Nick, I refuse to call it SCOGGLE.
Mr. Arbaugh, if you're listening,
yeah, no.
On Target would like to weigh in as an official editorial position, yeah, that SCOGGLE
sucks.
Okay, I was going to be a little more diplomatic.
No, I don't like the term SCOGGLE. I love the committee. I love the heart behind it. I'm not calling it SCOGGLE, Nick. I apologize. It's not going to happen.
Boy, I mean, I feel like we are this
sports
podcast. This podcast is to Nick Arbaugh as Fox and Friends is to President Trump. It's a one-way ticket to the ear of the president.
I think at this point, we've just become sports commentators on Student Senate. I think that's what the podcast is.
Well, I mean, I am a pretty good sports commentator, as evidenced by my bullet reports, which will be coming up later in the program. In any case, Nick Arbaugh has rolled out this Senate Committee on Greek Life that will be composed of two co-chairs, one from Greek Life and one from not Greek Life, and then four members from Greek Life and then four unaffiliated members, and will be charged with drafting a report on the positive and negative contributions to the social climate of the Greek community and making recommendations thereof. It's worth noting that the Board of Trustees has recently conducted a similar review, and it was after another review at the administrative level several years ago that Julie Ramsey, the Dean of Students, rolled out the evaluation process that we reported on last spring that has the five categories from Gettysburg Great all the way down to unacceptable, and that if fraternities or sororities are achieving at the unacceptable level or at the underachieving level for consecutive years, they can be removed from campus. And so, you know, I think that in recent years, other venues have considered Greek Life from their respective perspectives, and now Senate is taking its swing at this. You know, I don't know whether I haven't spoken at length about this particular committee with anyone. I don't know how it will be received within the Greek community. I think it is likely there will be a healthy dose of skepticism towards such an endeavor. I do think that the equal composition of Greek and non-Greek members will hopefully, for those in support of the committee, will lend it some credibility. But I think it remains to be seen to what extent the committee has buy-in from the Greek community and from the non-Greek community, frankly, and to what extent its recommendations will be heeded, maybe he did, but he did across the campus community. You know, it's worth noting that Senate has limited jurisdiction over things like the residential system, which I think is certainly one of the primary components of Greek life that people have questions over. You know, the notion that these fraternities host social events in their houses and that that creates an unlevel playing field. That's something that President Riggs has spoken about on this podcast.
Something about Charlie Scott.
Charlie Scott, the chair of the Presidential Search Committee, has also spoken about that on this podcast. You know, it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I think it's a step that, you know, I in my conversations with members of Senate, it's clear that this is an issue that they feel is salient. And in the absence of something last year like mold to galvanize Senate, you know, activist streak around a particular issue, maybe this kind of forces an issue to the fore of conversation. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. I think that no matter what, it's definitely going to add to the conversation, and in a lot of ways, like, that can lead to echo chambers, but that can also lead to a good thing. We've had a lot of conversation, especially in the opinion section of the Gettysburg, about Greek life. Mm-hmm. And I think from that, one thing that can definitely be said is that there are strong opinions on both sides. I am going to be interested to see who's put on the committee and how being not a member of Greek life, why you choose to be on that. Does that mean that you are also passionate about Greek life in a positive way and you want to be a conversation about it and you're just not in it? Do you super hate Greek life and that's why you're on this committee? I want to see how that works for the GDIs, as we call them, the goddamn independents.
Hopefully the FCC is okay with that term.
Sorry.
Here we are. I think that it will be... it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I think that to your point about both sides of the issue, I frankly think that representing this issue as a both sides issue is a little bit of an oversimplification insofar as there are people who will at least claim to be adamantly against the Greek life system that are in frat houses every weekend. And on the other hand, there are people in Greek life who have major objections to the Greek system. And you know, to what extent that represents hypocrisy on either side, you know, I think, frankly, it probably represents people trying to find their way within a campus community and having the ability to critically evaluate it while being a part of it. And frankly, not to get too high and mighty on the liberal arts angle, isn't that what a liberal arts education is all about?
No, but you are right. I think... Honestly, in general, I think most sides, because saying there's two sides is also a pretty dumb thing to say at this kind of about something like this. I think most sides will agree that in general, things do need to change. And I think certain members of the Greek community have started walking towards that. You know, I've been to a few philanthropy events for this semester for Greek life. And, you know, I think there are members of the community that really do want to do good with this position that they have of just, like, being in a smaller community and really being able to foster change. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a beautiful thing. Are there problems in the Greek community? Yeah. But I also think that members of the Greek community like to use their little communities to spearhead change in that, and that's a great thing. We said this, I think we were talking to Charlie Scott about this, or we were speaking about this on some podcast, but we were saying how, you know, ending Greek life isn't going to change anything for the better. You know, it's similar to how prohibition really didn't work. I don't think it would work. I think it would just create a lot of underground stuff that no one likes. And I'm not saying, on the other hand, that the college needs to provide more whatever. I just think that having conversations in something like this committee and just having conversations with your friends in your houses, in your dinner time conversation about these kinds of things, about conversations like diversity, about conversations like what happened in Pittsburgh, about conversations about Greek life and understanding where people are coming from is really important. And that's part of the liberal arts education, but I think that's also just part of being human.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that this committee is certainly after a nuanced conversation on the issue, and not to our own horn, but that's kind of what we're after, a nuanced conversation here on this podcast. I think that's going to wrap up our news segment. We'll be right back with the Bullet Report, followed by Diego Rocha's original piano composition performed today at his senior recital by Dr. Jocelyn Swigger and Elliot Pager. Stay with us. It's time for the Bullet Report. It's been a fairly quiet week in Gettysburg College sports action. On Halloween, the men's soccer team season came to an end when it lost 1-0 to Dickinson. The wrestling team finished 1 of 9 in the Messiah Invitational in the first match of its season. The men's swimming team defeated Washington College 154-105. The women's swimming team also defeated Washington College 156-90. And the football team picked up its 8th loss of the season, falling to Muhlenberg 49-0. Thus endeth the Bullet Report. Had to drag that out a little longer than normal because the remainder of the report was so short.
I hate you.
I get that a lot. Thank you. That's On Target for this week. We have no featured guests to thank today.
But we would like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support in this project. Be sure to subscribe to On Target on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or TuneIn, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, senior music major focusing on composition in the Sunderman Conservatory of Music. Be sure to join us next week. We'll talk to Hakeem Williams, associate professor of Africana Studies and director of the Peace and Justice Studies program at Gettysburg College. Have a great week.